You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Nerding fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 423. I'm here, Ruben, and Randall's here as well. Randall, it's good to have you back. You made it. I thought maybe you'd stay at Notre Dame Stadium for the rest of the season.
Yeah, we had to leave eventually, but we stayed a while and soaked it all in.
Tremendous. I don't think I've been on a higher cloud as a Notre Dame football fan ever. I mean, going to the national championship game, I guess, would have been higher. Like, after defeating USC, that 2012 season was incredibly high. But this just feels different because this is an actual butt-kicking.
Oh, exactly. I like how one student, I overheard one student after the game, he was walking out of the stadium. I just heard him say, "We ripped out their soul." And I thought that it was worded perfectly. It was the best football game I've ever been to.
So it was better than 2012 Stanford.
Yes. As far as the end of that game was very good, but as far as the overall game, that game was close.
So the moment was better, but the overall game, this was a better game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was.
That wasn't an exciting game at all. That Stanford
just
game,
the
in
overtime. Yeah, just the overtime is what was really exciting.
Anyway, but this game, the first half, it was absolutely insane. The Jumbotron, this has been the first game I've been to this season. The Jumbotron is incredible. I don't know how Notre Dame did it without that. Like, it adds so much to the game, and Notre Dame does actually have home field advantage now. But it was just everything. I mean, we watched the USC players sulk away into the darkness. I tried to take a video of it, or Tony did. My phone had died. It didn't last the entire game, but Tony tried to take a video of it, and I think when he thought he pushed start, he turned it off, and so we did not get the video of the buses leaving in the darkness. But it was, that corner of the stadium was pretty dark, and you just see USC players wander out with their hoodies and walk past Ronald Jones, and he was barely walking. He looked pretty bruised and battered. So it was just an incredible day to be at Notre Dame. And honestly, before the game started, just the feeling around campus and the stadium, just everything, everybody's in a good mood, everybody's excited, and Tony and I talked about it a little bit before the game started. It just felt like Notre Dame was going to have a great win. We talked about that before we actually walked into the stadium, and it exceeded our expectations.
Usually before a big game like this, I start getting the butterflies of this is probably not going to end well. But you felt, going into it, you just felt a confident vibe.
Yeah, we were up there walking through the tailgating section, and, you know, out and about, we watched the players walk up to the stadium, and I high-fived Brandon Wimbush. I think that's why he made some of those passes. But it was just different. You're right. Usually I'm nervous about these games, but it was just everything around Notre Dame is in a good place right now.
All right, well, we want to talk about a couple of different things. Number one, let's start with some things that we talked about before the game started. We talked about how we thought that Notre Dame needed to take a step in the passing game, more specifically Brandon Wimbush and the receiving group, EQ, Chase Claypool, and I included with that, I guess, Alize Mack and maybe Stepherson. We didn't really know how much he was going to play. Brian Kelly said he would play more, and so we kind of know what happened there. But do you think that Notre Dame did take a step forward in the passing game? And I guess, yeah, let's talk about that. Did Notre Dame take a step forward in the passing game?
Well, if you look at Wimbush's numbers, 9-19, 120, you know, then you see two touchdowns. You know, it doesn't blow you away when you just look at the stats, but I do think they took a step forward. There was passes that should have been made, and that should have been caught. They still need to get a lot better, but they did make some plays. I mean, the EQ touchdown, there was a couple passes for first down. There was one to Smythe for first down.
Stepherson's catch, his touchdown grab was incredible.
And Claypool had one as well. There was glimpses of it there. You could see glimpses of it in this game. It's not there yet, but you saw glimpses of it. And so they did take a step forward, but they're not there yet. I mean, they can still improve a lot.
I do agree with you that, yeah, they did take a step forward because we saw someone emerge that we haven't seen all year, and Stepherson did take a huge step forward.
Yeah.
And I do think with the performance he had, I do think my original prediction at the beginning of the season of him being the second most productive wide receiver, I think it's going to end up being true.
There's a good chance of that.
It seemed like EQ was on the field. He's the number one guy. He was on the field by far for almost every snap. And then Chase Claypool and Stepherson seemed either one or the other was on the field because often there was either two running backs or more likely two tight ends. But we'll talk more about Stepherson in a little bit. Do you think if Notre Dame would have been forced to grind it out without success in the passing game, do you think they could have won without those two touchdown passes or really any much of a passing threat at all? Do you think Notre Dame could have won this game?
Yeah, I think they would have still won this game, but that first touchdown to EQ kept USC from loading up the box and from just gearing up to stop the run. The throws came in timely places so that it kept USC honest. You know, they didn't convert a lot of passes, only 9, but it was enough to keep USC from just selling out against the run.
I thought there was, along with that, a really good balance, too, in the running game as far as running it outside. And Stepherson, I think both of his carries that counted, he had a third carry that, because of penalty, was called back. But I think both of those were in the first half. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they were. And Brian Kelly even mentioned, too, that they were trying to get the ball to the outside and then work on the inside. And I think there was a really good balance of runs to the outside, to the edge, tosses, and then also taking shots, like you said, taking shots downfield. And there were a couple that where either a guy was open. Chase Claypool had a step on a guy early in the game, and Brandon overthrew him. But it definitely wasn't all on Brandon either. There's still room for improvement, which makes it incredible to think how what this team could be if their passing game was clicking.
Yeah. And, you know, there was talk before the game, you know, that USC, you know, could, with their athletes, they could outperform Notre Dame. But Notre Dame was just quicker, faster. I mean, I don't think that's true.
You mean that USC has better athletes?
Yeah.
I did, but it definitely didn't look like it on Saturday. It didn't.
I think it's just kind of a...
Anyone was getting separation, there was times when USC wide receivers were running free, but usually it was because it looked like more of a breakdown than athletic mismatch. And when Notre Dame's receivers were running away from the defensive backs of Southern Cal, but they were also, they had some injuries there too, so they didn't have all their top performers on the field.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly talked a lot about third down efficiency from Brandon Wimbush, kind of when he's defending Brandon, and I'm very happy with, their name could be better in the passing game, but I'm not calling at all for Ian Book to take over, because I think with Brandon Wimbush, he by far has the highest upside and gives you by far the best chance of winning games. And Brian Kelly just mentioned third down efficiency, and he's looking more in depth than I am, but I just wanted to look back over the years and see Notre Dame's third down conversion percentage. And there's a lot that goes into this that I didn't go into as far as, well, what is the average down and distance on third down? And what's the difference between third and long and third and short as far as converting it? But just overall, Notre Dame is converting 41.35% of their third downs. This also includes the game against North Carolina where Brandon didn't play, and Notre Dame only converted 31% of those third downs. So this is just the entire year. And if we go back 2016, it was actually a little bit lower than that. It was 40.5%. 2015, it was a little bit higher, 42.5%. But 2014 was actually the highest. It was 47, over 47.5%. So this is pretty much right in line with where Notre Dame has been the past few years as far as their third down conversions. So it's not like because the passing game hasn't been as productive that Notre Dame isn't moving the chains, and they're definitely scoring points, so that has not been an issue.
Yeah. Well, with the scoring points, since the Georgia loss and since Drew Tranquil after that game said that they're going to punish each and every one of the teams that they play, since then they've outscored teams 200-65. So they're doing a pretty good job of that.
And they held USC under 20 or fewer points. No one has scored more than 20 points. Neither one of us thought this was going to happen.
I don't think anybody did.
Well, except we need to get our score, Brian, our coffee, Main Street coffee winners. Maybe.
Oh, I started looking at that, but everybody predicted a close game. Brian Kelly said that after the game that he had written on a note card and put it in his locker that said if Notre Dame didn't win big, he was going to be disappointed. So we didn't actually see that note card, but
well, if that's all it takes, just write that down every week.
Yeah, it was fitting. They scored. Notre Dame scored 49 points, and that's the most Notre Dame has scored against USC since the 77 national championship team. And they were there. They were honored during one of the breaks, timeouts. That was the green jersey game when they came out and Notre Dame just dominated the whole game, basically like this. But that was in 77. I mean, there's just so many things that this game, I mean, it's just incredible.
We're going to go through the different position groups. But I think before we do that, let's start a little more about Notre Dame's defense as a whole. Kind of it seemed like, especially after Notre Dame had a more comfortable lead, that they were going to let USC complete the underneath route. So when you give that up and just try to play for a third down and get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
And we did see them, USC did move the chains and was able to connect on some short routes, but
they've still only allowed one rushing touchdown on the season, which is incredible.
I guess we have to talk a little bit too about one thing. Notre Dame's, this was brought up on the forums from Solon, what you thought Notre Dame's chances were of winning out before and now afterwards. But then also, we have to talk about, well, is USC any good? So, you know, because that's what everyone, all the doubters want to talk about, including former podcaster co-host Kyle. Kyle Miller also, he said, well, USC's not even that good. This is his philosophy on college football as a whole. It used to be that just the Big 12 was just awful. Like they're just the worst. They can't play defense. They're terrible. None of them are good. It doesn't matter. They just beat up on each other. One of them happens to emerge with one loss and they're ranked really high, but they're not any good. That has now progressed to where all of college football is awful, except for maybe two or three teams.
According to Kyle.
Now, I do kind of agree that there are probably two or three teams at the top that are the best teams. And I would say they're probably Alabama, Clemson. Oh, they've got one loss, I know. And probably, or definitely Georgia. Georgia's up in there too. But probably those three teams, in my opinion, are, and am I missing anyone? I didn't even look at the top.
Penn State's number two.
Well, I guess Penn State. Before they beat Michigan, I didn't think they were that good, but clearly they've got something
going
on.
Well, I don't think Michigan is that good.
But so there you go. There are kind of three to four teams that I do think are really good.
Yeah. Well, Notre Dame is finally getting some love. Right now, a headline on ESPN is why Notre Dame is the nation's most dangerous one-loss team. So it is, I'm almost hate seeing that because once we get to that point, then Notre Dame kind of lets us down. But, but back to the defense. Yeah, they gave up some of those yards, and they're going to give up yards. We've seen them give up yards, but when it comes down to the red zone, they have, you know, stepped it up, and this is definitely more of a bend but don't break. And so it is hard to see the defense. It seems like they're really converting. They're allowing the team to do something, but somehow they come up with the turnover. And one thing that Notre Dame is so incredibly good at is when there is a turnover, they score touchdowns.
They scored three touchdowns off of the three
so it's one thing to allow turnovers. You know, if the other team gives up a turnover, it's another thing when Notre Dame is converting them into touchdowns at this rate. That, I think, is one of the biggest things about this team. The defense forces turnovers, and the offense finishes it off. And nobody can match that. I mean, it just takes the will out of the other team. I think if you would... Maybe that's why these next couple games might be so tough. It looks like they could be tougher because the teams don't give up a lot of turnovers. North Carolina State, I think they might be number one as far as in giving up turnovers. And some of the other teams, Miami is up there as well. What could make it closer is if you don't get these turnovers.
Well, and if you think of Michigan State, if Michigan State would have scored a touchdown instead of
The fumble on the goal line.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that game, at the very least, would have been much closer.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Notre Dame isn't going to have the kind of success they have been having. And I think we've kind of been saying that, but they have been doing it so far.
We've been so used to teams either being good on defense and bad on offense, or good on offense and bad on defense. And they're finally putting everything together.
The biggest concern is kickoff coverage, right? I mean, the passing game, yeah, we want to see a better passing game, but they're getting it done. We're offensively as a whole, we're moving the ball and scoring points.
Yeah. But as far as going back to answering a question, how good is USC? Here's the thing. When it comes down to a game like this, I think your record kind of goes out the window. This is one of the biggest or the longest rivalries there is in college football. And it's Notre Dame and USC. I mean, neither team wants to lose the other. It's a big deal. And it's, you know, how it's been over the years. It kind of, in the last, you know, few years, it hasn't been as much of a, you know, title elimination game. But it kind of felt like that in this. I mean, at this point, it was basically whichever one came away with the win still had a chance. Well, like Notre Dame, they still have a chance to get to the playoffs. Oh, if USC would have won, too, they would have had the chance.
Yeah.
And so it definitely had that feel of how the games were longer ago, that it was a title. It was almost like a title elimination game.
It was. And I do think that USC is a good team. They might end up the year with another loss, but they're not going to have more than one loss.
What's going to be interesting to watch is how much, I think kind of what happens to some teams that play Notre Dame, when Notre Dame beats them like this, it kind of breaks their will.
No, that's
it
just
Notre
Dame.
It rips out their soul.
That is just...
Well, what is USC?
Randall, that is Notre Dame. After we're eliminated from the playoff, Notre Dame has nothing to play for except pride. And when your pride's taken away, you have nothing.
Yeah.
These other teams are still a part of a conference. They're still playing for the conference championship. There is much more incentive for USC to keep on playing hard and winning than there would have been for Notre Dame to keep on playing hard and winning if they had been the loser on Saturday.
Bad thing about USC is I don't know who did their scheduling. Whoever, obviously the guy that's the athletic director is involved, but they have no bye week. They're playing 12 straight games, and they are very battered and bruised and have lost a lot of players, which you can't plan for that. But it's kind of stupid that they don't have a bye week at all this year. So I think that's going to – I think their last game of the season is maybe against UCLA.
Yeah.
And they're going to – I think they're going to come limping into that game.
Well, they're limping now, so maybe they'll be healthy by then. But USC, like Kyle, I wish he'd be on here to defend himself, but he was just saying, oh, USC's not that good. They may not be, they're not a top 15 team, but they're a legitimate top 25 team, and Notre Dame absolutely crushed them offensively and defensively.
Yeah.
Where were we? Were we going to move into then the probability of Notre Dame winning out?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Solon had posted over in the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net, and said that before the game, he had Notre Dame at probably about a 10% chance of winning out. And he said now he's up to about, or sorry, at 10%. Did I say 20? I'm not sure what I said. But anyway, at 10% before the USC game, and now after Notre Dame destroyed USC, he has met a 20% chance of winning out, and he thinks that is somewhat conservative. I would have agreed before the USC game. I did think there was a chance, but a slim chance of Notre Dame winning out, because you've got, well, you had USC, but you've still got Miami, and you've got Navy, which has been tough. I know we're maybe chuckling, but Navy has beaten Notre Dame when they should not have been beating Notre Dame, and then what I think might be the toughest game, I do think is the toughest game remaining on the schedule, is Stanford. It's at Stanford. I know it's also at Miami, and Miami, that's going to be a tough environment to play in, but Stanford knows how to play Notre Dame. They know how to play them close. They know how to play them when there's low scoring or high scoring, and they've gotten the better of Notre Dame the last few years.
Yeah, I agree. I think the game I'm worried about the most is Stanford. And it is, well, it's very hard for teams to go undefeated. I mean, it seems like every year, like right now, there's still how many undefeated teams left. And you're like, oh, how are you going to sort this all out? But it always comes down to maybe one or two teams that are undefeated.
2 weeks or a little over a week ago, there was a lot of, there was some more clarification as far as who's,
yeah,
some of the big losses.
And it's hard. Yeah, Notre Dame is destroying teams, but we've seen, you know, Clemson had a down week and lost to Syracuse. Like, who is Syracuse? And so I definitely think there's a much better chance of going undefeated now the rest of the way. But I'm at about 40%.
I think it's less than likely, but I'm higher. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Probably about a 40% chance.
We're just scared. The thing is, we're scared to say 100. We all want to believe.
Well, Notre Dame's performance on Saturday definitely gave me more confidence in what this team can do. But I'm right there with you. Probably at about a 40% chance.
Well, they are now the number 9 team in the country, so I think we're a week away from the first college football.
Before that comes out, you and I, because you've been very critical of the playoff committee and where they rank teams and Notre Dame, let's go through and at least rank out maybe the top 10.
Before
they do it.
Where we legitimately think,
you know, this is who they've played. This is what's happened. We're not going to spend the time to do all 25, but the top 10 and maybe just the top 6, depending how we're feeling. And I guess submit your own too. Are you positive it's after the North Carolina State game?
I think it's a week away. Let me look it up.
Okay, while you're looking that up, we're going to go through the different position groups. I definitely want to talk about Stefferson more in the emergence that he has made, and Equanimeous St. Brown. So maybe we'll start with the offensive side of the ball. I guess some side notes. Dexter Williams didn't play, but Brian Kelly said they wanted to hold him out and have him play against North Carolina State. Randall, you actually ran into him a little bit, and he pretty much confirmed that too, right?
Yeah, we saw him after the game, and he said he was fine, ready to go today, but Brian Kelly wanted him to be 100% healthy, ready to go for North Carolina, wanted to save him for the North Carolina game.
So it seems kind of weird, unless there was maybe a little bit of a question mark, to be totally, totally healthy. And when you do have Josh Adams, who's a stud, and you've got guys who have proven they can contribute in Tony Jones Jr. And Deion McIntosh, I think it's fine and safe to hold him out. Greer Martini had his meniscus repaired, and Brian Kelly said he'd be full, or he'd be cleared for practice on Tuesday, tomorrow. So Brian Kelly has been a little optimistic in his injury report projections, so I'm starting to be skeptical, and I think everyone is.
Yeah, but the way Coney played, I'm not too worried. I want Martini to be back.
I want him to be back.
Coney made up for it.
Coney, yes. He needs to be getting a majority of the snaps. He stepped up in a big way.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, phenomenal performance.
The first rankings are next Tuesday, October 31st.
Okay.
And then it's on Tuesday evenings after that.
So
the final selection is December 3rd.
So after on our Monday podcast, a week from today, we'll give our rankings, how we would rank these teams. And you can do it as well. Maybe either send an email, mail@irishsportstalk.net, or we'll have a thread over in the forums, and you can give your top 10 ranking. And remember, this is just the games that have been played so far. Doesn't matter who's coming up on the schedule.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about offense. Offensive line. I mean, what?
It's funny to
what
hear.
What can you say? But just looking at rushing numbers. I mean, their name again rushed for well over 300 yards, 377 yards. There were a few penalties, but nothing too egregious. Third down conversions, 7 of 13. And Brandon Wimbush, he was given enough time to look downfield, and when things weren't there, make a play with his feet.
Yeah, they played incredible, and it's interesting to hear announcers, especially like rewatching the game, they're saying, oh, this offensive line is one of the best in the country, and they've been playing like this all year. And I'm like, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
They played horrible the first two games.
Not the first two. You thought they played horrible against Temple?
Well,
didn't they rush for 300 yards?
It wasn't as bad then. I guess the mistakes didn't stick out. The Georgia game was horrendous.
Even the Georgia game, there is, if you're playing someone better, you're not going to do as well.
I know, but I think that game woke them up.
Well, and they're definitely like, I mean,
they were better than what they...
McGlinchey gave up the sack at the end, yeah.
Okay, let's put it this way. They were much better than what they played in. They are much better than how they played in that game.
I do, yes. I'll agree with you there.
But they're all making play. I mean, even Sam Mustafa, you don't hear his name at all. Remember last year, the mistake, snaps, just different things.
Well, we heard his name mostly against North Carolina State, so let's hold our breath.
But he was, you know, the... Some of the big plays, like Josh Adams' 84-yard touchdown, was blocking by Bars and Nick Wisher. So it's not just the left side of the ball. It's not just McGlinchey and Nelson. It's all those guys. And Sam Mustafa is doing his job. There was one time that McGlinchey and Nelson both, I wish I would know a little more about how their assignments are, but they both took on the same guy and somebody got past them for the sack. And Brian Wimbush should have seen that he was going to blitz, but they had an offensive line that could have picked him up.
And that was the one sack that Notre Dame did give up.
Alex Bars had a penalty in an ineligible receiver downfield, but that was a play that broke down. I mean, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you often see it in that situation because they just kind of—he destroyed his guy, and he was just going downfield to pick up the next blocker, and so.
Well, it was an RPO, and so it's hard for them to always know what is happening.
Yeah, and Bars had another penalty, holding penalty. That was on like a 10-yard gain, so it was called back. Was that the Stepherson
No, Stephenson's was a block in the back by Wimbush.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, there was about a 10-yard gain, then it was called back for another 10 yards. So that turned into about a 20-some-yard penalty. So that was bad. But overall, they're playing very good, and their blocking is incredible. I mean, the one play that Tony Jones, I believe, ran up the middle. I mean, there's just a gaping hole. He didn't get hit. It looks like there's everybody is right there in the middle of the line, but he didn't get hit, you know, for
well, and that's how, quite pretty a much few yards. Josh Adams' 84-yard touchdown run was.
So they're doing an incredible job.
Tight ends, you had mentioned Wisher doing a great job in blocking. Alize Mack had a nice block, too, on one. I don't remember how long the run was, but being physical and just owning his man and allowing for lanes for the running backs to run through. He was on the touchdown pass to EQ. Brandon Wimbush said that the first read was actually Alize Mack, but because if I the def, or I forget the exact wording he used, but basically because of the coverage, EQ was able to get free and he could see that. So at first I thought maybe Brandon, maybe, and it, I think it is pretty much one read for Brandon Wimbush and then start scrambling or start drifting and looking. Yeah. Looking to run, but clearly there was. So I think instead of one read, it's more just looking at one section of the field and seeing what's there, and then using his legs, and that's fine. I mean, it definitely worked on Saturday.
And Smythe caught a pass, and then he also dropped one. There's another one he should have had, but the one he did catch, he caught it and ran the ball. It wasn't just like he caught it and got tackled, but he did some good running after the catch. Alize had one. I would count it as a drop.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
He should have had that.
And Irish Don did note that in the forums as well. I believe
that was right before the halftime. And I liked what Brian Kelly did there. They were gonna try to score again. Yeah. And usually we haven't seen that, but they were going for the knockout punch. But what was it? Alize dropped one, Claypool dropped one, and it was just a bad series. But that was on Mac. So yeah, they can still improve on their pass catching.
Do you earlier, let's talk
with the tight ends, it was being at the game watching, it was weird. I'd expected Alize to be in there on more third downs, but you saw him come off the field on a lot of third downs. So I was watching that, then didn't see who all was actually out there on the third downs.
But was he replaced by Smythe then, or was it more three wide receiver sets?
I didn't keep track.
Well, let's talk about wide receivers. Stephenson was targeted three times, had three catches, led the team in receiving with 58 yards, one touchdown.
So was the Cam Smith hamstring injury?
It's a grade one hamstring injury, which I don't know what it means, but
well, that was time for Stephenson to. I did see Cam Smith after the game. He exited pretty quickly. He was one of the first guys out of there.
Stephenson is not looking back. He's gonna continue to be the number two or number one receiver.
Well, he's making plays. He's the guy taking advantage of the balls thrown his way, making some incredible catches and making plays that the other guys haven't been doing.
And running with the football too. Two great runs on a jet sweep and making a guy miss. He's more elusive with the football than I thought he could be. I just primarily pictured him as a guy running downfield and getting
on the deep throws. Getting
behind the defense. But he was made a guy miss and got the first down because of that on one of the jet sweeps.
He played much better than what I expected him to, and even more than I thought he would. But I think his energy and his pass catching ability will help EQ and Claypool step up their game.
Okay, so speaking of EQ, I did think that he looked like he was playing harder. We've been kind of critical that he hasn't been fighting, being as violent and fighting for the ball as much. But I did think he did step up and played hard on Saturday.
Yeah, he had an incredible touchdown catch, which the ball was right where it needed to be, and even Stephenson's catch. Touchdown catch. I mean, we haven't been seeing that from the receivers this year. And Claypool made some nice first down catches. It seems pretty clear. You got to have EQ, Claypool, and Stepherson out there. And Brian Kelly mentioned, it was kind of interesting, after one of the press conferences, either Saturday night or the Sunday one, he said that Stepherson wasn't just in the doghouse, he was 6 foot under, but he's dug himself out of that hole. So it's just,
didn't he also say he was in Siberia instead of Siberia?
Oh, I didn't catch it. I'm not sure.
I didn't understand what he said, but I thought he was maybe trying to say Siberia instead of Siberia. Or, yeah, either way, I think that position group is finally starting to make sense.
Yeah.
Running backs, Josh Adam, what a workhorse. 19 carries, 191 yards, 3 touchdowns.
And he didn't play the fourth quarter.
I thought that Reggie Brooks, when he was criticized Josh Adams for not finishing off his runs, I thought he was being, oh, come on. I mean, Josh Adams was still getting a ton of yards those first few weeks. I mean, seriously, finish. I mean, you can't, not every run can end up in a touchdown, but yeah. Since he made those comments,
he's not been caught.
Getting caught from behind.
No.
And I'm continue to be impressed just with what he's able to do. And of course, the offensive line is a huge, huge part of that too.
But one thing I've noticed with Josh Adams, most of his runs are just straight ahead. You know, he breaks open, but rewatching the game, he made some cuts in there that were incredible that I hadn't really noticed before. There was one run where it was about a 14-yard gain where he made 2 or 3 cuts, made the guys miss, and got the yards. And it wasn't just a straight running forward play. He's finally getting some attention from the national media. The thing, nobody wants to hear it, but I think the reason that he hasn't been getting the attention that the other guys have is, first of all, is his passing. The other guy, like Saquon Barkley, is incredible pass catcher. Josh Adams, the first drive, he dropped a pass that he should have caught. So that hurts a little bit. And I think the other thing is, yes, Josh Adams is absolutely insane running the ball, but this offense line, this team is so good that the backups have been getting 100 yards. The quarterbacks have been getting 100 yards. So when you look at the stats, it's not just, you know, Josh, oh, he got 150 yards. Then there's another back that got 100 yards as well. So you're like, well, it's not just Josh Adams. And so I can see why he's not, why it's taken longer for him to get the attention that he needs. But the things that if he wants to be in the Heisman talk for the Heisman, he's got to catch the ball and keep running like he has. But
that could have added, yeah.
With the other running backs and Wimbush getting as many yards as they have, you know, you look at what they had, 350, 370, what was the total rushing yards?
377.
And he had just over half of those. It's not, when you look at Saquon Barkley, Bryce Love, they have
70% probably.
80% of those.
Yeah, that I never even thought about it that way, but that is a fair point. I mean, you don't expect Navy's running back to be a Heisman, which I don't even... I know they get really, really distributed, like, between the different backs that they use, but it is somewhat similar. But I still think that Josh Adams is one of the best backs in the country.
I'm just saying,
it's not like I think that Josh Adams, that you'd have anyone back there and they'd be getting 190 yards and 3 touchdowns. Tony Jones Jr. was in there as well. And Brian Kelly made the comment that they do like having Josh and Jones in there together versus having Dexter in there with one of those two backs, because they're two big backs, close to 220, and they like what Jones can do in the passing game and as a blocker. And he did have a very nice block. I think it was on one of Stepherson's runs. It looked like, I think he almost took out a couple people kind of as he was diving / blocking forward, but definitely paving a way for, I think it was on Stepherson's, one of his jet sweeps.
Yeah, and even McIntosh, I think he played, he got some snaps in the second quarter of the game. So, yeah, it sounds like they're all healthy. Tony Jones, you know, has been banged up, but it looks like they can go back. Brian Kelly mentioned they can go back to those two running back sets next week. And
yeah, because we haven't really seen it since.
Yeah, it's since been a couple Georgia? Games. It's been a couple. I'm not even sure.
Maybe. Yeah, but yeah, I definitely haven't seen it the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Or yeah, haven't seen much of it. All right, quarterback. We already talked a little bit about the passing game. And the thing is, the quarterback can also run the football. And when you have a quarterback that can run like Wimbush, you're happy with what you're getting.
Yeah, I thought he stayed in the pocket a little more than what he has. I mean, he showed more pocket presence than what he has in the past couple games. And when there was nothing there, he would step up and gain 20 yards for the first down. And he was making sure he got that first down and then was getting out of bounds.
You're right. He wasn't
the one time
taking...
he lowered his shoulder, knocked the guy, but he got the first down. But it was, he
right
knew where
marker.
He was at on the field.
You're right. So, it didn't look like, yeah, you're right. It didn't look like he took unnecessary hits. On the play where he did get sacked, he did try to avoid it and probably should have just have thrown the ball away or recognized the blitzer and that it wasn't being picked up or made an adjustment to the offensive line.
But yeah, and the time he did, I think it was that 20-yard run, I mean, he sidestepped the guy and he actually jumped over a guy on the ground, but that's what you get. Brandon Wimbush can do that. And but he made more throws. Some of those throws were right on, and we haven't seen him make that many good throws in one game. I mean, some of the one to Chase Claypool, I mean, he stayed in the pocket and he hit Chase Claypool. I mean, it looked like it was in traffic. I mean, there was a lot of guys around there, but he hit him for the first down. And so he's definitely getting better. I don't think I was worried about him being off for 3 weeks, but it looked like he got better. So, and who'd have thought that you'd be playing your backup quarterback for most of the fourth down against or fourth quarter against USC, and even Gummy Van Gorder got in there. And being at the game watching him, I could see him. He should be a coach.
Watching Gummy?
Yeah. It looked like he even lined up. The one time the offense was lined up, and it looked like he was telling the guys to move around, like getting it was the running backs. I'm not sure who was running back. And Wimbush, he kind of got them to move around like they weren't in the position they were needed to be. And I mean, he was doing it from the sideline.
Okay,
from
is,
the
is,
side
that, is that when the timeout was called? Because at one point, Josh Adams and Brandon Wimbush, they were arguing back and forth about who's supposed to be where or something.
Okay.
And then, a timeout was called then. But
he was directing traffic from the sideline, okay. Basically. He knows this offense, and he knows where they need to be, and it gets pretty funny watching him.
Well, he definitely shouldn't go coach defense, because I'm not sure if his name will be very welcome.
But I wish they would let him throw the ball. He came in at quarterback at the end of the game. I wish they would let him throw the ball at least once. He did good in the blue and gold game, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, I just run the clock out and let's just move on.
Give him a chance.
Okay, let's move over then and talk about defense. Defensive line. Well, first off, the defense start out with a bang.
Yeah. The game started out, I was when it started, and then, was it a 3-and-out?
Yeah.
It just didn't. It was like, oh shoot, you know, they're already.
Well, it was a 3-and-out, but
and the punt, it was just, they were ready to start at like.
It was close to
the
40-yard
line. Yeah. It kind of took the breath away from Notre Dame. It's just like, oh okay, here we go. But the defense.
And okay, the defense stepped up. Tavon Coney credited with the sack strip, but Tillery was getting penetration on that, and who knows if he wouldn't have been in there, and clearly he was in the eyes of of Sam Darnold. If he wouldn't have been there creating disruption, maybe Tony wouldn't have been able to get the strip away. Maybe Darnold would have had the time to tuck it better.
Yeah.
But Tillery, I thought, looked phenomenal in there. Khalid Kareem getting 2 sacks.
He got the game ball. And it's been so hard for Notre Dame to get sacks. We were just talking about before the podcast. Last year was the fifth game before they got their first sack.
It was against Duke,
fourth,
right?
Fourth or fifth game. And now you have a backup coming in and getting 2 sacks. I mean, it's just incredible what this defensive line is doing. And like you said, Tillery was getting pressure. All those guys, they're always in the backfield. I mean, Tillery, yeah, you know, his numbers don't show that he's, you know, maybe getting the sacks or the tackle or anything like that, but he is always creating pressure and forcing the quarterback or the running back into the defensive ends, and they clean it up. I mean, even the defensive ends, Trumbetti and Hayes, both Hayes and
Julian Okorah.
Okorah, always back. It is so good to see them come around those edges. And I mean, Okorah, there's finally an edge rush.
Except for the penalty, it would have had a sack, but there was a defensive holding penalty that negated that that sack.
And even Jay Hayes, he was in the backfield and then ran down Sam Darnold from behind. I mean, even when they get back there, Sam Darnold, you know, slipped out of the pocket. They're running him down from behind. It is just incredible what they're doing. And you even see Kurt Heinisch, true freshman, there getting pressure as well.
It is good to see that Heinisch is still being productive. I think at the beginning of the year we had talked about, well, you know, usually at some point these freshmen hit that freshman wall and aren't able to contribute anymore. And he did have a little bit of a injury, but yeah, he had finished the game with 3 sacks, half a tackle for loss, 1 quarterback hurry. All right, you want to talk about the linebackers?
Yeah.
Well, Coney, I mean, it was clear he was ready to play. And Brian Clay did say he had his best game.
Yeah.
He led the team with tackles, 11 tackles. Had 1 sack, 2 TFLs, a quarterback hurry, and then the forced fumble, which was the sack.
And even he even made plays on special teams. I mean, yeah, he had the tackles, yes, on the kickoff coverage.
I just don't see... Greer Martini has been a very solid player, but I don't see how you can give them equal playing time at this point. I don't know how it broke down the last couple of weeks, but I think you have to have Coney in there for a vast majority of the snaps. At least, I mean, if he's going to play like that.
Yeah.
Niles Morgan, actually, the 3 linebackers again led the team, were the 3 leading tacklers.
This was one of the line, as a linebacker unit, this was one of their best games, I think. They were making the tackles they needed to. They were making plays. And, you know, other games we kind of seen them miss some tackles. And I think overall, as a unit, this was one of their best games.
And Tranquil recovered the special teams fumble punt, muffed punt.
Tranquil is, we saw him when they walked out of the locker room out into the field. We were back there, and like Tony said, Tranquil was dialed in. He looked like he wanted to kill somebody. I mean, just the look in his eyes, there was... He's a very intense player, and he shows it on the field, too. I mean, incredible. I mean, he died, even on that punt, the fumble, he recovered that fumble. I mean, he was on it.
Yeah, he came flying in.
The Coney fumble recovery on that first USC play, I'm glad it was called a fumble on the field. I think it would have been hard to overturn either way.
It would have been hard. But watching the replay, you could see when their body separated who had the ball, and you could see that Coney already had it in possession when they were kind of falling apart. So I think it was the right call as well. But you're right, it may have been hard to...
Did they
overturn it?
I have to keep trying. I never really thought about it. The guy sitting beside me said that they say it's confirmed where the play stands. Supposedly, it's kind of there's a difference in how they turned that. Yeah, there is. And so it was like they knew it was a fumble. There wasn't any doubt in their mind. So I guess, I mean, they obviously saw it. But just if that wouldn't have been called a fumble on the field, I don't know if it would have been enough to overturn it or not. But they're ripping at the ball. Matthias Farley is doing it in the NFL as well. So,
all right, defensive backs, the cornerbacks.
Watkins was targeted a lot. He seemed to always be the guy that was part of the play, good or bad. Which they switched. They supposedly switched sides in the field. Watkins was playing the field and Love was playing the boundary.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what brought that on, if it was the matchup.
Well, I thought they had been playing that way.
And
haven't they?
Was switched. It's switched from how they have been playing. And Watkins was the guy that he made a lot of good plays, but then he's also the one that was involved in both touchdowns given up. The touchdown pass that he gave up, Brian Kelly was talking to him on the sideline for a while, went back to the bench and was talking with him. And it looked like he was kind of lost. We kind of thought they were supposed to be in zone cover, and it looked like he was kind of lost on the play and was at the wrong spot because he was wide open. I mean, we all saw it. You could see it happening. And, yeah, he was just there too late. But he also had a pass breakup in the end zone that could have been a touchdown. So he had incredible plays, and then he also had some bad ones. Crawford, he played good, but he was always scrambling to get there. Like, he was just getting – it wasn't like he had his guy covered. He was always running to get there. He made the play, but it wasn't like he was there. He had to make the play. Troy Pride was in there a little more. I mean, he played quite a bit.
It looks like he played a ton.
Yeah. So, they did great. I mean, they're going against one of the best quarterbacks in the game this year, Sam Darnold. And even though he's having a little bit of a down year compared to last year, he's still a good quarterback. And they did very well.
All right, then safeties.
Oh, I was going to mention the fourth down. You know, they gave up that fourth down. Was it fourth and six? They gave up the fourth down, and they should not have done that. Okay, I understand they're going to give up some plays, you know, in the middle of the field, whatever, but they were playing off the ball, off the receivers. On a fourth and six, the cornerback shouldn't be running up to the receiver to try to stop him. They caught the ball, and it was a first down. That was kind of frustrating to see.
Don't you think that was just a breakdown?
I don't know. On the players' part? I don't know, but I think they should have a lot more pressure on the receiver in a situation like that. They did press the receiver some. You know, you don't always see that on the TV when you're watching it, but they did do it some, but then they were playing off.
Well, it seemed like Julian Love was usually the one that was pressing.
It probably depends how they... Yeah. But that was frustrating to see on the fourth down.
Yeah. All right, safeties.
I think it's good that we don't have more on the safeties every week because they're not...
Well, remember, yeah, last year we'd be talking a lot about Drew Tranquil not getting turned in time or trying to chase down
it's because
the wide receiver.
And the front end of the defense wasn't doing their part.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so it was always up to the safeties to make the play, and then they get burned.
Line of defense.
Well, that hasn't been the issue. With this defensive line and the linebackers, we haven't had to depend on the safeties, and they covered for them a lot. And so it's a good thing. Elliott was called for defensive holding during the end zone, which that was a weird...
Did you hear it explained then when you...
Well, from what I heard is that if the ball doesn't cross the line of scrimmage, it's not an automatic first down.
Okay, I had heard if it's a running play, but which...
Okay.
I guess if it would be a tackle for loss or a sack. But either way, because...
Well, it was very confusing in the stadium because it said first down, and so we all thought, oh, first down. Well, then they run one more play, and they're like, oh, now it's fourth down. We're like, nobody could figure out what was going on.
But did it on the sideline? It said third down. The sideline marker said third down, didn't it?
Oh, down on the field. Yeah. I didn't look at that. We were looking at the.
Cause I thought on the TV.
At the Jumbotron and the.
The ribbon around the side.
Ribbons, yeah. Which they did have some. They still got to work out some kinks. At one point in the game, it said the score was 55-14. I'm like, what? How did it get there that quick? Like, well, you know, they have been scoring a lot of points, for, and people were saying, well, let's get to 60, and then maybe, about that maybe, time it went back to 49.
Maybe we are in the Matrix.
But that's how I understood it, as it didn't cross the line of scrimmage. The ball didn't cross the line of scrimmage, so it was an automatic first down. But that penalty was on Elliott. So it was kind of a weird series of events there.
Okay. I think that's it. Special teams. It's still a concern. Yeah, kickoff coverage is still a concern. I don't know what kind of return men we have coming up in North Carolina State or Miami, but I think we've probably faced the most dangerous return men of the season at this point. But it is still something that they were working on it during the bye week. That was one of the issues that Brian Kelly mentioned.
Well, and some of those kickoffs, Notre Dame did, or Justin Yoon kicked him out of the back of the end zone. But was it twice, I believe, or was into the end zone? But he had the wind to his back on those. So that the wind definitely helped him out on those. So it looked much better, but he was kicking it the right direction.
And how was it windy?
I remember the one that he kicked it out of the back of the end zone. Right before that, there was a gust of wind coming through there, so it definitely helped him on that. But it was better. I mean, at least they're doing that. Wind or no wind, they're doing it. The punting is incredible. Newsom, that one, we were sure Notre Dame was going to get another safety. But how that ball went out of bounds, bounced all the way to the side, went out of bounds, and then they got a penalty. So it was based on the half-yard line?
Oh, it was closer than the it was close.
I'm surprised they didn't get. They probably could have got a safety if they really wanted to, but they could have got burnt as well.
Yeah, it's dangerous. I'm glad they chose to not go for broke.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you? We need to find out who our winner is for the coffee.
I don't have that. I'll announce it on Wednesday's podcast because it's hard to figure out because nobody predicted a win like this.
No one's close. All right, so Wednesday we'll have that coming up. And then we'll also give our preview for North Carolina State.
Notre Dame did pick up a commitment this weekend on Sunday. Paul Mawala, he is from Mishawaka, just down the road from Notre Dame, and he's a safety. Right now he's just ranked as a 3-star safety, but most people think he's a lot better than that. He's 6 foot, 200 pounds, and Notre Dame added defensive back to the class. There were 82 commits on campus, or that's what Brian Kelly had said.
Recruits
on campus. Some of those would have been committed to Notre Dame, but it was a huge weekend, and Notre Dame did everything they needed to do to show those recruits on where they should commit.
This was a perfect game, and from what you said, it sounded like the perfect atmosphere, too.
It was even warm.
The only thing that was missing from watching on TV was that there weren't any sightings of the Admiral.
I saw you tweeted that out. I'd almost forgotten about that. But there was a lot of big-time players there. Phil Dracovic was there, Jamie and Franklin. And there's other guys that were committed. I did talk with those two guys a little bit. And even Amon-Ra St. Brown, EQ's youngest brother, the number one receiver in the country. I believe he's like fourth or fifth overall is there. And yeah.
Notre Dame made a pitch.
USC was a school that was, I mean, for him, it's basically Notre Dame, USC, Stanford. And if this doesn't answer some questions, then I don't know what will. But Notre Dame is definitely trending in the right direction with these recruits. They've had a lot of big-name guys there. And they got another commitment. So it's been a couple months since they had a commitment. Things have kind of died down with players playing their high school games. And, yeah, I think it'll start to pick up again.
Okay, thank you guys for listening. And if you enjoy the podcast, share it with a friend. Tell your other Notre Dame family about it. And definitely check out the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net, and the website. Solon had an article with his three takeaways from the USC game on Saturday. He talks a little bit about Josh Adams, the defense, and tackles the topic of, is Notre Dame elite? So you can read his thoughts about that over on the website, irishsportstalk.net. So thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.